to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
And she says, I wish that I could be like the cool kids.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you as we start our second hour on this Monday afternoon. We've got to talk some college football and college basketball. And joining us now to do just that, it's David Cobb.
Joining Brian and Brett now on Sports Time is national college football writer for CBS Sports, Memphis native and Tennessee grad, who you can find on Twitter X at David W. Cobb. It's David Cobb.
David Cobb joins us now from CBS Sports, where he covers college football and college basketball, and a lot to discuss. But the big news over the weekend for Dan Hurley and UConn, Braylon Mullins, the star freshman, going to return to stores for a sophomore season. It looked like a lot of mock drafts had him as a late lottery, certainly in the teens, potential draft pick, but he has made the decision to go back to college. What did you make of that news over the weekend?
Yeah, I think it was really smart for Braylon Mullins, because you come back, you're in that late teens, early 20s sort of range in this year's draft. You're just as well off coming back to college basketball, making a nice seven-figure salary in college basketball, and then coming out next year and being a top 10 pick, because next year's draft, barring something unforeseen, it is not regarded with nearly the level of anticipation that this year's draft is. This is a great draft for the Grizzlies to have two first-round picks, because there's so much talent in this year's draft, but there's just not going to be that same level of talent in next year's draft. And so for guys like Thomas Hawk and for Braylon Mullins to go back to college, it makes sense, because they can make enough money as college basketball players now to where, all right, this is probably around what I would make as a rookie, and then I can come out next year and command even a higher salary as a rookie, because I'll probably be a top 10 pick. And Braylon Mullins, he needs to put on about 15 pounds of muscle still. So once he does that and rounds out his game, yeah, I could see him being a top 10 pick pretty easily.
David, Bryant and I were talking about that on Friday. I knew Condon was back to Florida, but it's official. Hauk is back, because I was afraid I'd gotten tricked by a bogus tweet site. But he is returning to Florida.
It seems crazy, doesn't it? That a guy who has proven as much as he has would come back to college basketball, but he's back.
Wow. And well, they're the favorite.
Yes, I think there's a case for Florida to be number one now today. Ruben Chinyelu has said he is going to test the waters for the NBA draft. So I think it's a similar situation for Chinyelu, though. I mean, I think it's like, hey, could I get drafted? Yeah. Could I also make more money potentially returning to Florida and then get drafted even higher the following year? Yes. I think he could very well end up in the same situation. So assuming that's the way it plays out, you're looking at a Florida team that could have Thomas Hawk, Alex Condon, and Ruben Chinyelu back for a third consecutive year. And I'm with you, Brett. I think that makes them number one, not only in the SEC, but if they get Chinyelu back, Boogie Flan's returning, Urban Clapchar is returning. So you could very easily see Florida number one in a lot of the preseason top 25s going into next year. I mean, they're not going away. They're not going anywhere. Todd Golden is building something that's there to stay.
Isn't it funny / ironic that Florida and UConn, that they're able to do this? They're able to bid against the NBA when you had so many Kentucky fans just convinced that they were going to be able to do that through the years with various players, and every one of them turned pro.
Yeah, well, no doubt. It's interesting now, the situation Kentucky is in. They are kind of grasping at straws a little bit in this portal cycle, and I don't think it's due to a lack of money. I don't really know what it is. They're just not hitting the mark in terms of getting the high-level tier 1A sort of talent that you would expect to migrate to Kentucky. Meanwhile, John Calipari's doing all right. You know, he's retaining Malik Thomas. It looks like he might retain Billy Richmond. He's got another stud young freshman guard and Jordan Smith coming in there, and J.J. Andrews coming in there, five-star
Sean Andrews' son, yeah.
Yeah, so So it turns out maybe it was more about John Calipari than it was about the name across the front of the jerseys there for so many years in Lexington.
Imagine that.
How about it? And I think Memphis fans are learning a little something about that as well.
Talking about some of these guys that are maybe making the decision to return to college, I heard that there's been some rumors about Nate Amint, who right now seems like a lottery guy. A lot of places have him as a top 10 type of guy, that he could test the draft waters, but also is maybe open to returning to Tennessee. Tennessee has had a nice job in the transfer portal. Have you heard anything about Nate Amint maybe making the decision to return to Knoxville?
Well, I mean, it is telling that we haven't seen him announce anything yet, which suggests there's not been a final decision made. I mean, a lot of these guys, it's so obvious they're going to the draft, and then they put something out and just make that official, and you just move on with your life, right? And I kind of thought that would be the case for Nate Amint. He, as you mentioned, Brian, I mean, highly regarded, a potential top 10 pick. Now, he's not the most refined or finished product in this draft class, but his long-term outlook in the NBA is still really good. I find it hard to believe that he would come back to college, because I don't view him the same way I view Thomas Hawk and Braylon Mullen. For those guys, you can really see, all right, if you're later in the lottery or you might slip into the 20s, it's obvious maybe, or makes more sense to come back to college. I mean, Nate Amint, we're talking about a top 10 guy. Now, is it possible he could come back to college in next year's weaker draft class after another season of building out his body and showing his game? Right, that he could be a top five pick, no doubt. I think that's absolutely possible. But you also run the risk of injury or whatever the case may be, right? So, like, there is some risk there, especially when you look at who Tennessee is adding. Tennessee is adding legitimate offensive options and guys who can score, and there might not be as many touches or offensive sets run for Nate Amint next year with the type of portal class that Rick Barnes is bringing in. So I guess I'd be surprised if he came back, but I don't think you can rule it out entirely just based off the fact that he's not made any sort of a formal declaration at this point. And Tennessee apparently has plenty of money to play with. So you never say never, but Brian, I would be surprised if Nate Amint came back to college.
David, we keep hearing, and I keep saying it and thinking it too, that it's not sustainable, that we're going to have donor fatigue, that this just simply can't last. Well, the budgets don't even compare to 2 years ago for college football and college basketball rosters, and we're seeing players that would have been easy turn pro guys that are coming back. It's helping with the one of the most successful college basketball seasons we've ever had. We just completed. College football's in a great place. Maybe it is sustainable, Dave.
Maybe it is. I don't know. Where are we at in 10 years in terms of the non-rev sports? Where are we at in 10 years in terms of just the cost of getting in for fan, like the casual fan? Is the casual SEC fan, going to be able to afford season tickets even in the nosebleeds?
This parking out at sports, and y'all've lost your minds on this, but as long as somebody's paying it, it's not going to go down.
No, you're right. I mean, I don't know. Is it just becoming something that only the elites can enjoy? But I also think back to like the late 90s, though. I mean, the only way that we were going to, that I was going to get to go to a Tennessee game as a kid was typically if it was going to be a lower tier opponent that nobody else was going to use the tickets, or the tickets would be cheaper, and it would just be a little bit easier to do, right? So I guess it's kind of always been that way, so I don't think it's doom and gloom. I do worry on a certain level about the non-revenue sports and whether or not they're going to continue to be viable when so much of the money has just got to go back into football and back into men's basketball. It just has to, because they pay. I mean, they to be relevant or competitive at all, to even justify the existence of an athletic department, you have to funnel it all to football. You have to funnel it all to basketball. And when you're paying the players now, those margins are so thin that I think it just you know, it's going to significantly reduce the importance of some of the non-revenue sports on these campuses. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's my one concern. But as it pertains to basketball and football, which are what we care about, what we watch, what we consume, what I write about, what y'all talk about, I don't think we're in any trouble there. I think the especially at the highest levels of the sport, I don't think you're going to see any slip in popularity whatsoever as it pertains to like high level men's basketball, high level college football. I think they're as good as they've ever been.
Yeah,
David, that's just a great take on the affordability for a lot of people. What was your first Tennessee game you saw in person? Who's the opponent?
Tennessee UAB. 1998, important year, 37-13, final score, and coming out of that game, I forget who it was, but whoever had been number one that day lost. And so going out of Neyland Stadium that night, it's great to be a Tennessee Vol, and people weren't chanting that because Tennessee had beaten UAB. That was obvious. They were chanting that because everybody knew because of the other results that night that Tennessee would be number one when that new AP poll came out the next day. And, I mean, I'll never forget it. I was 6 years old, and it just – I mean, it set the course for so many of the things that I pursued.
National championship year.
It was. I mean, for that to be the first year that I ever went to a game, then they win the national title, you know, I mean, here, you got me going down memory lane now. I still have the program from that game. I still have it. So, yeah, that was – you know, and so like my
and you thought you were at the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh! I mean, can you imagine? Like even now, when you walk into an SEC stadium, even if you were at one last year or last week, it still is like, whoa, this is big, right? But when you're 6 years old and you go and see it for the first time, it's like, you know, wow! Like, I mean,
everything.
Hey, I
grew how up, it smells, you know, how it feels, everything yeah. about it is big.
It's unbelievable. So we got to preserve those experiences, not just for the sons of doctors and the sons of lawyers and the daughters of, you know, business owners and CEOs, right? But like that's got to be an affordable experience for the son of a mailman, the son of a preacher, the daughter of a nurse, right? Like to get in the gate at an SEC stadium to experience that, because that's how you get the next generation, the casual fan, the middle class, like Southerner, like continued to engage for generations to come in the sport, like by having that experience and having those smells and seeing those sights and hearing the band and seeing the team run through the tee or whatever that pregame tradition is at your school, right? So like that's got to continue to be affordable. That's kind of one of my worries about where we're headed with the pricing on everything.
Well,
you know, that,
I think well founded, David. I have said, David, when Arkansas and Ole Miss discontinued as a non-conference game for a long time. Early 60s, they met in the Sugar Bowl after the 69 season, but from about 63 on, they discontinued playing non-conference, started back playing in September of 1981 in Jackson. That atmosphere that night, I've been to 5 Super Bowls, give me Jackson that night, September 26th, 1981, Ole Miss and Arkansas over any Super Bowl.
Well, it's the experience and it's the passion. It, you know, they say it just means more, and we make fun of it, but it's true. And I saw something really interesting my feed and my algorithm, it's all tailored around right now the transfer portal and stuff for basketball. And one of the leading European agents on the basketball side, Misko Raznatovic, he represents dozens and dozens of really successful college and NBA players. And he was explaining on this video what he's learned about the passion of college sports fans over the last 3 or 4 years and comparing it to what he sees at the professional level. And it was just so fascinating to hear somebody who's not from our culture but who's become immersed in it over the last 3 or 4 years articulate the difference between going to a college game and going to a professional game. And he basically says, you know, at the professional game, you go to be entertained, right? At the college game,
you're the entertainment.
Because, yeah, right. Like, you're right. It is like the passion, the intensity, not just of what's transpiring on the field or on the court, but like in the stands and what it means to the thousands of people who are there. It is different. And I think that's what makes college sports special, right? Like, you remember, you've seen the documentaries and stuff about the advent of, you know, nationally televised college football games. And the big breakthrough, I can't remember if it was ESPN or Fox or whoever it was, that they discovered was, you got to pan the camera to shots of the fans.
Yes.
And to shots of the stands. Because that's what people connect with, is seeing the surrender cobra pose after the opponent converts that fourth and long, right? And that's so different. I mean, not to say you don't get that. And you got the Chiefs heads at Lambeau. You know, you've got passion in the NFL, but it's just different. And the Super Bowl, it's only to be entertained. I mean, three-quarters of the people there aren't even a fan of either team. They're just there to show how rich they are, right? And we can't let college sports...
don't really care.
Right. And we can't let college sports become that. We can't let it be a thing where people just go to post on Snapchat or Instagram that, oh, hey, I was there. Meanwhile, like the common fan is trying to figure out if they can still afford their $140 a month, you know, TV subscription just to watch the game at home.
Mm-hmm. Talking to David Cobb, he joins us every Monday, talk college football and college basketball. We've got some breaking news that came down within the last 15 minutes or so. John Rothstein, your colleague over at CBS Sports, reporting that UConn Solo Ball will miss the entire 2026-27 season following a wrist injury, will return for the 2027-28 year with a medical redshirt. So after the big news over the weekend of Mullins returning, some bad news about Solo Ball missing the season. So some big news there. But I'm curious, because we got some big news here about an hour or so ago with Aaron Bradshaw right before the deadline entering the transfer portal. What type of market do you think Aaron Bradshaw will have in the transfer portal this year? Obviously, three times now in the transfer portal, looking for his fourth school in four different years. What kind of market do you think he'll have?
Probably more than what he's really worth, because there's just not a lot of seven-foot bodies who have played high-major basketball out there and available. He's going to, you know, we all know who he is at this point, which is a far cry from the sort of prospect he was labeled as. So, I mean, if there's any Memphis fans out there upset about this, then I don't know what to tell you other than, did you watch the guy play? I mean, there's nothing to be upset about here, but this guy, he's still going to get paid very well. He's still going to get paid very well in the open market. Desperate to LSU has zero players right now. Zero players. Zero players. So Aaron Bradshaw won't be the last guy we see over the next 24 hours who gets in the portal at the 11th hour, so to speak, because there's teams out there who are desperate. I'm in the middle of going through a little data view right now on just how many players are aging out of college basketball, because last year we had a lot of the guys with the COVID year age out. This year, even more of those guys, the fifth and sixth year guys, aging out. And so there's just there's just so many holes to fill right now in college basketball. Aaron Bradshaw's going to go fill a hole. If anybody out there thinks they're going to get starter level, like NCAA tournament quality performance from him, they're mistaken, just like Memphis was when they recruited him a year ago. But there will be a role out there for him. He'll get paid $800,000 or something to go play, you know, 16 minutes a night for a high major program.
Mm. And David, I had everybody, not everybody, but I had a lot of people mad at me around here. I thought his improvement as the year went along, yes, I think some of it was because of Roy Rogers, some. But I think the biggest January, February uptick in Bradshaw was the competition. In November and December against better teams, you hardly could play him.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I mean, it's a great call, too. On a certain, you know, on a certain level, it's like he found the level of competition in the American that probably suited him better than where he was at before, playing against the, you know, probably the two best conferences in America, the SEC and the Big Ten. So, it makes sense. You know, I'm trying to think where else might make sense for Aaron Bradshaw. You know, could he?
Back
could
to Kentucky. Oh, man, Mark Pope would love him.
their fans would riot.
That would be never say never. The bounce-back transfers, they happen. Look no further than Tyler Harris, right? Yeah. Bounce-back transfer, right? It happens sometimes. Nah, I'll be fascinated to see where he ends up, but I think Memphis can do a whole lot better, honestly. I do think they can.
I do, too.
In terms of a big, right?
Like, well, I know with him you can go 13 and 19. What are you missing?
You're not missing anything. You know, Memphis just needs a few more big bodies. Mm-hmm. Like they need a couple of big bodies and they need a point guard. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they have left to check, right? And you're like, what are you talking about? They only have like five guys on the roster right now. All you need is a point guard, two more big bodies, And like, I think you're almost all like, you're almost all the way there. Like, I think you're almost set. Like, you don't need 13 players. Like, you don't want to have too many mouths to feed in this era. Yeah, right, no, exactly. But so mouths to feed, both in terms of finances and in terms of the, you know, the points and minutes allocation and all of that. And so, you know, I think they're, I actually like what they're doing. Now, I understand a lot of people are put off by, well, what about the big name guys? Like, you know, this is Memphis. We're used to getting, you know, even Doug McDaniel and Aaron Bradshaw were big name guys on a certain level. Sincere Parker, he was a big time scorer. He was a player that other high major schools were interested in, right? Like, where's this caliber of player? Well, how come we're not going after that type of guy? Well, look where it got you. Look where it got you. I actually think that the additions they've made so far make sense. Like, Vavers and Jerry Dang, are they going to be All-Americans? No, but they can play a role. They can go stand in the corner and knock down threes, and they're long enough and versatile enough defensively to help you out on that side of the ball as well. And then you bring back a Julius Thetford, like a role player. You bring back like an in-city, you know, sort of guy, like a Fred Smith Jr. You keep him in the city. Right, like I think there's something to be excited about with that. Now, am I sitting here predicting that this Memphis team is going to go 30-4? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that given the resources that they have, given the restructuring that they've done, given the lackluster results of a year ago, like what they're doing makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like what they're doing is going to get them back to a respectable level in the American. Now, their ultimate ceiling will be dependent on what they do from here. So. Do they get a Josh Holloway from Texas A&M? If so, I think that's a pretty good pickup. Yeah. People are going to say, "Oh, well, he only averaged 4 points a game at Texas A&M." Yeah, but that's in the Buckyball system where you know you play 14 minutes a game. You play 14 minutes a game at Texas A&M in the SEC. You come to Memphis as a senior. You're an experienced player. I think he could actually be a really good player in the American. I think he could average 10 points and 4 assists in the American and be really productive. So. You know, look, I don't think this is going to be a preseason top 25 team, not by a long shot, but I do think it's got a chance to be a decent, respectable sort of program in the American.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I like what they've done so far, and a couple visits set up for this week, and maybe some more news coming down the line for the Tigers. But as always, David, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
All right, guys, I appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David. We appreciate you.
David Cobb joining us, like he always does every single Monday afternoon from CBS Sports. Make sure you head over to CBSSports.com and check out all his work over there covering college football and college basketball. Well, we need to get to another break, and when we return, we're switching gears. We're going to talk the NFL draft. If you need an update, we are 74 hours and 34 minutes away from the draft, as that will get started Thursday night. We're going to talk to the agent, Jimmy Sexton. He joins us next to talk the NFL draft.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Welcome back in Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you, and we're switching gears a little bit. Got to talk the NFL draft. 74 hours and 30 minutes away from Thursday night's draft, and joining us now to talk all about it, agent Jimmy Sexton joining us now. Jimmy, thanks so much for joining us. A lot to get into, but obviously everyone excited for the draft later this week. For you, kind of what does this week look like as an agent, and kind of what do you expect, and how much, I guess, has the draft changed over the last couple of years?
It's still basically the way it's always been, with the exception of the amount of attention it gets seems to grow every year. And the, you know, the NFL does a great job of having a different event just about every month in the off season, whether it's the combine, the owners meetings, the draft. I mean, they are a year round league now. And so, but it's pretty much, you spend a lot of time this week answering calls from parents and players and, you know, the people around the player that are nervous about, you know, should we go to Pittsburgh if we're invited? Should we not go? Where do you think I'll get picked? Things like that. And all of us have lived through, you know, the good green room and the bad green room scenes, you know, doing it as long as we've done it. So, but it is I guess those of us that have been in it for so long, it's another night. But to the player and the family, it's not another night. It's one of the biggest nights of their career from that standpoint.
Jimmy, you talk about having done it for so long. What year was your first NFL draft representing players?
1985.
Ooh, it's really changed in that time. The green room has changed. I think in 1985 they were still letting Pete Rozelle smoke at the draft, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, and they had, I mean, the whole, just the electronic things they had at the draft, nothing like it is. It's almost like the, if you go back and look at it, it looks like the manual scoreboards at Augusta, everything was done by hand and no computers or anything like that, no cell phones back then. So it's changed a lot, but it's still the same. You know, you go back and watch some of those 30 for 30s about Elway and Marino and how they were picked, and it's still the basic nuts and bolts of constructing your team.
You say the good green room and the bad green room. Do you prefer to be there in the green room or back in Memphis at your office?
I mean, we're basically in the green room every year. So the first night especially we're there, and then we're back in the office on Friday and Saturday. But, look, the green room's great when it goes well. The green room's not great when it doesn't go well. And so you can't control it. As much as an agent would love to tell you they control it and they know everything, at the end of the day, you've got, you know, human beings on the other end that are evaluating players that have different grades on them, and you've got needs that teams have that dictate how fast certain positions come off the board. And so it is a very harrowing, crazy night. And there'll be some nights like it was for us a couple of years ago where we had 12 first-round picks in there, and everything fell perfectly that night. And there'll be other nights where you think it's going to fall that way and it doesn't. So, you know, you see it go both ways.
We've seen the draft start moving from city to city this year up in Pittsburgh, a couple years ago up the road in Nashville. Do you like the draft moving from city to city around the country, or did you like it more when it was at one location?
I'm probably a traditionalist. I liked it when it was at Radio City Music Hall in New York. And the main reason that I liked it is because I could stay at a hotel two blocks away. The draft would start at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock on East Coast, and you could literally have your staff, have your players and their families in the room and slip in the side door to the green room and do it and then get out of there. But, you know, it's great in Radio City because you have all the New York fans there, the Giants, the Jets, all those. But it's much larger production, you know, when it's on the road like this. I mean, we saw hundreds of thousands of people in Detroit a few years ago. Same thing in Nashville. So it's grown so much, and there's no way they can take it back to, you know, Radio City. It's just gotten too big. And it looks like to me what they're starting to do is, if you have a city that is a Super Bowl potential host, so let's call it Phoenix, L.A., Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, Nashville, Atlanta, you know, Tampa, Miami, you're probably not getting a Super Bowl, I mean, a draft, okay? But if you're a Pittsburgh, a Buffalo, Detroit, you're going to get the drafts from time to time because they send the spring event to those cities. I remember a few years ago in Cleveland in April, we were literally sitting in the green room and people were under blankets back there. It was so cold. They couldn't get the, you know, it just was freezing cold. So you do get some crazy weather days for the draft when you go up north. But I think you're going to see more of them go to different cities that aren't going to be Super Bowl contention cities. And then the Super Bowl cities will get the Super Bowl.
Jimmy, who are some of the guys that you're representing that you think will be first-round picks?
Well, I think our guys that probably will be are Ty Simpson from Alabama, Blake Miller, offensive lineman from Clemson, Dylan Thienemann, a safety from Oregon, and Emmanuel Warren, who's a safety from, or DB safety from Toledo. So those are probably our guys that will go. Good. I mean, you know, here's the thing about the draft, Brett. When you always tell guys this, if you know you're a top 10 pick, you should go to the draft. If somebody tells you, hey, you're going to go 15 to 30, you shouldn't go to the draft. But sometimes the league invites those people to the draft. And they do it because they want a great cross-section, you know, of players there. But if you think you're the 20th pick, you can just easily be the 33rd pick, which is the first pick of the next night. And I had a situation years ago where I had Randall Cobb and Julio Jones both in the draft, two top receivers. And I knew that Julio was going to go very high, and I knew that Randall was going to be a second-round pick. And Randall got invited to the draft, and he really, really wanted to go. And I sat him down and talked to him, and I said, now, Randall, you're going to be a second-round pick. and he went on to have a 16-year, maybe 14-year career, you know, for the Packers and the Cowboys. And he said, that's okay. I just want to soak it all in. I just want to – I promise you I won't be upset. Well, he trained with Julio. They're friends. He saw Julio go six. And then by the time we get to the next night, he's a little frustrated. And I'm like, wait, we talked about this. Yeah. But you can never prepare him. I mean, you never can prepare the family. You can never prepare the player. You as the agent know how it goes because you've been there every year, right? You see it come off the board. You see how it works. But it is a great event. It's a great night. I mean, they've made it such a huge event. I mean, the NBA can't do it this way because they have to have it right after the season. But when you compare just the NBA draft with the NFL draft, it's not even close. Mm-hmm. I mean, the NFL draft is a huge, huge event. Probably, to be honest with you, the second most popular event on the calendar of NFL fans to the Super Bowl.
Have you told Ty Simpson and his dad that he will not be the first player from Martin, Tennessee that you've represented because you had the great friendship and relationship with Chad Clifton that I'm on a one-man mission to make sure he gets to the Pro Football Hall of Fame someday?
No, they knew that we had Chad because Chad was a played at Martin Westview, was a great player, and so there's a friendship there, and I'm sure that probably had a lot to do with us having the privilege of representing Ty.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about Ty Simpson? What do you think makes him a going to be a really good quarterback at the next level?
I mean, he sat for several years at Alabama and learned and went through a lot of adversity, which I think helps you in the league. I think he has a very extremely low interception percentage, which is almost historically low, so he takes care of the football. And I think he's, you know, the knock and people are going to say, well, we'd like for you to be a multiple-year starter. And that's true. I get that. But I also think the fact that he's been there as long as he's been there, hopefully, and you know, here's the thing is that from the quarterback position, you know, we had Sam Darnold and Josh Allen in the same season drafted. Sam was drafted 3, Josh was drafted 7. It took Sam literally 3 or 4 teams to find where he would really blossom, and obviously won the Super Bowl this year. Josh went in right away in Buffalo and played great. A lot of times, for a quarterback especially, it's not where you get drafted; it's who drafts you, what organization, what coach, what system they have, and who they have playing around you, and that dictates your success as a quarterback. And you could go, you get the number one pick in the draft. But if you go to a horrible team, you'll be the number one pick in the draft with a lot of money, but you won't have a very successful career probably. And so we preach that all the time to our quarterbacks that, hey, it all depends on where you get picked and who picks you.
You were probably the least surprised of anyone to see that very confident, you know, self-confident, really together person in Sam Darnold, because you told me after that draft that his parents are just among the most, his dad, electrician or plumber in L.A. and mom, yeah, a school teacher or something like that?
Yeah,
is that right?
They're salt of the earth people. It didn't take you 10 minutes to be in their living room to really know why Sam was who he is. And so he's all that's good about sports. And, you know, you hope your son grows up to be like Sam Darnold. He's a great, great young man. And he's the kind of guy you cheer for because he did go through some tough times in the league getting to the right spot, but he's obviously definitely in the right spot now.
You have to wear a lot of hats with coaches and with players. You have to be a counselor, business advisor, best friend, but you also, like you said, good green, bad green room experiences. You got to be not just amateur psychologist. You maybe should have gotten a psychology degree at UT, Jimmy.
Yeah, I think I took a few psychology classes. I don't know if I got a degree in psychology, but no, you do learn. I mean, in this business, you need, you know, a lot of emotional, they call it EQ, emotional intelligence. The academic side helps you, but you're dealing with a lot of people every day that have a lot on the line and who really feel like this is their one chance and they want to be dealt with like they're your only client. And so you do learn a lot, see a lot. You see a lot about human behavior, both good and bad. Mm-hmm. And you meet a lot of great people in this business, but you also meet some, you know, you meet crazy agents, crazy coaches, crazy players, and you also meet just the opposite, great people in all those lines of work too. Mm-hmm. So I've always said, if you like a business where nothing is the same every day, you want to be in this business. If you like a lot of structure and a lot of things being the same every day, don't get in this business, mm-hmm. you know.
you're talking about some, you know, players earlier about, you know, going to the draft in person or not. When you have a guy that you feel pretty certain is going to be a first round pick, high first round pick, do you advise them one way or the other of go be in person at the draft or, you know, stay at home, do it with your family? Is that a case by case type of thing? How do those conversations go?
I mean, I would always hope they would stay at home with their family. Their family can go, a certain number of them can, mm-hmm. to the draft. But a lot of guys, when they get the league invite and they see sort of what's entailed in that, and they figure out they can, you know, I remember several years ago when it was in Dallas, we did it on the floor of AT&T Stadium, and they had plenty of room in the green room to have big tables for families, and they had a great turnout that year. But some guys will say, hey, look, I can have 10, 12, whatever. A lot of times the venue dictates the number, okay? And so, you know, they'll say, look, I've got more people than that. I've got 40, 50, 60 people that are going to come to my house. And so in that case, you would always advise them to stay at home. I think a lot of times the player wants that picture with the commissioner, right? Mm-hmm. That's something they're going to put on their mantle or in their office for the rest of their life, and you can't really duplicate that. And so they like to do that. But it is electric in the green room when your name's called. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you can feel it back there when they call the player's name.
I bet so. In the culmination of a lot of hard work, mm-hmm. and really the real hard work, really getting ready to start. We're visiting with Jimmy Sexton about the draft on Thursday night. And Jimmy, I know you're friends with and have worked with all of them. But what are some of the front offices? I know Les Snead. You know well, John Lynch, John Schneider. Boy, that NFC West is loaded, isn't it? What are some of the front offices you really like dealing with, and they have a good handle on what they're doing?
I mean, really, when you look at year in, year out, who's in contention, those usually are the clubs that have the people that do a really good job of managing or running the whole personnel area of acquisition. Because it's really it's the ownership. Then also you have the personnel side and then also the coaching side. And some of those are blended a little bit more in some organizations than others. But, you know, the NFC West is very tough right now with the three teams that are really, really good. And then you've got a lot of teams. Denver's got a new owner. It's done a really good job there. Sean Payton's gone in, turned that thing around. You get a lot of that. Pittsburgh's always going to be a good organization. Baltimore is always going to be a good organization. The Patriots have... they were down a little bit. Now they're back. You know, they did that with drafting one of our guys, Drake May, who sort of turned that program around. So it does. You do notice from time to time over time who does the best job, and usually the teams do the best job. They don't panic. They take a player before they have to have the player at the position. So they draft a quarterback. People always say the best time to draft your next quarterback is when you don't need him. You know what I mean? If you wait till you have to have one, then it's hard to go get him. But you tend to learn who the guys are that are the best. And sometimes that shifts sometimes in the front office, depending on who the GM is and who the head coach is. But most of those organizations I mentioned are the ones that are there year in, year out.
Jimmy, last thing, one college football question. What size playoff do your SEC head coaches want?
As many as possible.
Me too.
I mean, I think it's the 9-game season now. It's the fan base has not gotten used to a, quote, 9-3 team. You know, I liken it to the years that are one of the years, I think, Brett, you know this better than I do, but when the Giants won their Super Bowls, I think one year they were 10-6 or 9. I mean, you know, sometimes you can get hot at the right time or you can be a team. I would say like in college, 9-3 is not as record that people that are contending aspire to be. But we're going to see a 9-3 team that is worthy of making the playoffs based on the schedule they played, that should be in the playoffs. And I think with either 16, 24, whatever it ends up being, that you're going to see that. And the fan bases have to get used to that. And I think the selection committee does too, because we're going to see teams that have losses that are good enough to qualify to be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over these next couple of years. But, Jimmy, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy draft night and draft weekend, and we got to do this again soon.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you so much, Jimmy Sexton. Just terrific for him to carve out some time Absolutely. For us on one of the busiest weeks of the year for him.
No kidding. No, that was a blast. And,
but they're all busy for him.
They are. He is a very, very busy guy. But, yeah, I mean, to get him this week and to kind of get that insight of what's going on behind the scenes from an agent perspective, really, really cool to get that. So definitely appreciate him giving us some time and counting down the days until draft night.
There's a lot of weeks that he – that are his.
Oh, yeah.
But coach Thanksgiving weekend, coaching carousel time, and draft week, those are big.
Now he dominates those weeks, so really, really fun to have him on with us. But let's go ahead and get to another break, and when we return, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255. Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford and Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
All right, it's very rare that I bring a hockey big number to the table, but today is one of those days because my big number comes from the Buffalo Sabres and their win yesterday afternoon. A really remarkable game. My big number is the number 2. The Buffalo Sabres became the first team in NHL postseason history to win in regulation time after trailing by 2 or more goals to 0 with 8 minutes or fewer remaining in regulation. We talked about this game earlier in the show about, I mean, Buffalo really had nothing. They really struggled nothing. Throughout the game. It looked like they were dead. And out of nowhere, with about 8 minutes remaining in that game, something clicked, and they were able to find a lot of success around the net, ultimately scoring 4 goals over that final 8 minutes. It really did. It was an awesome environment.
It was my favorite sports moment of the weekend.
I mean, it should have been.
The hockey.
I mean, it really could
be. And I still don't know the rules.
Well, it's we can help you out with that. We can figure it out. But it was probably one of the biggest moments of the year in hockey all season, maybe in sports. It was a really, really cool story and just a remarkable game to watch.
But the NHL playoffs were not better than the NBA playoffs.
No. But they are. I mean, both for me on an equal level. I think both are unbelievable to watch.
It's a
different
like
level. No, it is really, really good. And I thought both sports were just awesome over the weekend.
My big number is 26. That's the number of runs Arkansas gave up to Georgia in baseball on Saturday. 15 of them in the top of the ninth.
Wow.
26.
Wow.
Georgia only scored 20 in a 1987 Liberty Bowl against
that?
Arkansas.
Wow. How about 20 that?
20-17 win. John Casey at the buzzer. I'm still frozen from it.
Well,
one of the coldest nights.
It sounds cool. It sounds really cool. But
they scored 20 in the Liberty Bowl in 87. They get 26 on Saturday in baseball, and they play in September in football.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big differences between Major League Baseball and college baseball is you'll see some wacky scores out there and kind of runs galore all over the place. Rare that you see it in an SEC series, but we saw it over the weekend. And, yeah, football score kind of broke out, 26-14, the final of that game. So that was
really weird.
And
every pitching change just brought the booing on.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
It was heavy.
Rough stuff for Arkansas over the weekend. But, yeah, I mean, when you give up 26 runs, oh, boy, I mean, that's unthinkable.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
No, I mean,
in an SEC game.
No, I was about to say, I you see it around college baseball every now and then, but man, in an SEC conference series, very rarely do you see that many runs.
Minor league one time.
Well, yeah, the runs can also break out in minor league baseball.
I mean, like 7-, 8-, 9-year-old
sure.
minor league, not double A or triple A.
I see. Well, yeah, no, you get it at all sorts of levels.
My minor league team.
Yeah. Oh, really? How about that?
27-0. We beat the boys' club.
Nice. There you
27-0.
Go.
27-0.
There you go. At least you were on the winning team rather than the losing team. Another big number for me, just getting the news, and we'll talk about this a lot with the Michael Cole in our next segment, but the tiebreakers have been announced for the NBA draft. The Grizzlies will have Phoenix's pick, the number 16 pick in the first round. So we know they will have a lottery pick. We won't know where that will be until lottery night on the 10th, but we do know that second first round pick will be number 16. And we'll see what type of guys are available there at 16 right now on Tankathon. Thomas Houck is the pick at 16. So, we'll see if it's him, if Yaxel maybe drops to 16, who could possibly be in that range for number 16.
Draft homework assignment for both of y'all. I want us to do a top 10 list, kind of that question that we asked Jimmy Sexton about some of the organizations, but ours is going to be top 10 that we would like to be embedded in from 2 o'clock Thursday afternoon until Mr. Irrelevant's name is called with the last pick, just to see the inner workings. I know Landon probably would want to be with his Titans, and that's going to be a fun one to be involved in. But you're probably going to have Jerry Jones.
And
wouldn't it be great if Jerry Jones would check in from the submarine again this year?
I would want to be nowhere near the Dallas Cowboys on draft week, and it would probably only make me mad. So
that story about Stephen Jones having to almost get physical with his dad and not let him take Johnny Manziel.
That's crazy. That is wild. But it makes sense. You know, it doesn't surprise me. Because
they get Zach Martin, who I think will go to the Hall of Fame as a guard.
Yeah, he absolutely, I think, will walk in to
but
Canton.
That Stephen Jones had to get down on him. Dad, don't do this. Yeah. This is crazy.
The Dallas Cowboys draft stories are far more negative than they are positive.
But wouldn't that be fun to watch that?
I think it would be fun for non-Cowboy fans. I don't know as a fan if I would enjoy watching that. But yes, I think for outsiders, it would give them a good laugh.
Y'all work on your list for tomorrow at 4:30.
We will definitely work on that. We need to get
everybody mentions the Steelers, don't they?
Oh, yeah. No, that would certainly be a good one to be a part of. But we need to wrap up the second hour, get to a break. When we return, we'll talk the NBA draft, as we now know where that second pick will be for the Grizzlies. That was announced just a little bit ago. We'll talk some Grizzlies as the offseason has started. We'll also talk the NBA in general after round one. It has gotten kicked off over the weekend. A lot of NBA talk that comes your way next with the Michael Cole.